Good morning, Wisconsin. Morning, world. It's a new day, and thank you for kicking it off with us right here at 97.5 FM, 1320 AM, WFHR, where we are locally grown radio. 7:04 on the clock, got your host, James J. Maloff. I am joined in studio by our head of the news department, Miss Melissa Kay.
Hello, hello.
Good to see you, Mel.
Yeah, good morning.
We're going to have some fun today. We got a bunch of good things lined up for you. We're going to get into a Guinness World Record coming up. Mm. Got something very cool that I want to touch on, like, right now. I didn't want to preview the rest of the show. I just want to get to it. Something going on across America about upcycling that I think is really cool.
Awesome.
Dive into that. A little bit later, we have got something that hotels are doing that could be in our That Ain't Right story.
Mm. Yeah, I got one to add to that.
Okay, all right. Good to know. Good to know. That's good. Plenty of other stuff, of course, in this 7 o'clock hour. In just a little bit, actually, we'll get into our National Day of Calendar, let you know about what is unique about today. 8 o'clock hour, Misty's Menu Birthday and Anniversary Club. 9 o'clock hour, Good Stories of the Day, That Ain't Right stories, and plenty more fun. We're going to tell you about civic media and their $1 million advertising giveaway. Yeah. We'll talk about that. I want to preview a little pet of the week this week for people.
Awesome.
Get into that some. All these things coming up for you. We'll get into our schedule as well for the rest of the week here for the show and Morning Magazine and all the rest. Plenty of things going on.
Mm-hmm.
How is it? How's it going for you this morning? How did you coming in from Abbotsford?
You know, it was the roads were wet, but it was foggy. Mm-hmm. There were definitely patches where the fog was pretty dense. So be careful driving out there.
How'd the news go together this morning?
Good. I actually found a couple local interesting stories that are very pertinent to our listeners.
Well, I wanted to tell you in person. I was going to do it yesterday, but I wanted to tell you in person. I've heard from 3 to 4 different people in just the last week or two that just started listening to us. And one of those people told me part of the reason they were listening is they really like our new news and our news at the top of the hour and
awesome.
Our news breaks.
Oh, great.
And I was like, well, I wanted to be specific. I didn't know if they meant CBS or you. I wanted to get it. They were talking about you. I like her delivery.
Oh,
that's what they said. They like your delivery and everything. So you're doing a nice job. Keep it up.
Well, I appreciate that.
It.
It's always fun to hear from listeners.
Now's a good time to start slacking.
right
when you're starting to hit the good part and everything.
I can just lay back and take a break.
Yeah, just news today. Things happen, people. Look it up.
You should pay attention. It's rough out there.
Your minute news break is just...
Well, you know, I started clicking on tabs and...
You know, things, people. And that's the news for... That's what it be. That's what eventually news
just
breaks
awkward
become.
Breathing.
Just, oh my God, people. Just good stuff out there, though. Mm-hmm. And I want to touch on some of it. Just to kick off the show, I want to make more of a point of doing that. I think we do a pretty good job of it as it is. But really hitting on good stuff right to kick off our show.
Yes.
A resident at an assisted living facility in Britain is getting help from members of the community as far away as New Zealand, and her project to set a Guinness World Record for the longest knitted chain.
Oh.
Ina Rackley, great name, Ina Rackley, 87 years young, who resides at the Elmstead Buba Care Home in Chislehurst, London, is nearly completely blind, but keeps active by knitting. She enlisted the help of knitting groups in local communities to help her pursue a Guinness World Record for the longest knitting chain. Rackley's project also received assistance from residents and Tortilla Gardens in a retirement village in New Zealand, who knitted yarn links to add to Rackley's chain. Rackley and Debbie Garner, Elmwood's senior activities coordinator, originally came up with the idea of knitting a massive blanket, but ended up deciding to pursue a world record for the longest knitted chain. Once they got this thing going, they're like, wait a minute, we've got something.
Hold on a second here.
And the wonderful assisted living lady took the extra step to kind of look into it a little bit, like, hey, she's got something going here, and told her about it. And this 87-year-old lady got so darn excited, she turned 30. She, like, right in that moment, turned 30 years old. And it's just a cool story. It's unclear if there is a current Guinness World Record for the longest knitting chain, but a similar project in Guernsey in 2019 resulted in a chain of 1,073 links.
Okay.
So if I'm, and I don't know knitting that well, if I'm getting this.
Yeah, I have questions.
Yeah, yeah. I just, you know, nothing like I'm questioning what they're doing.
No, not at all. I just want to know the statistics. Is it, you know, like 10 stitches wide? Hmm. It can't be like one stitch.
Yeah. Oh, I didn't even think of that part of any of it. Oh, yeah.
Like you could with a crochet chain. Because you can do a crochet chain forever. But if it's actual knitting, you need to have probably at least 2 stitches. And how boring would that be? It's got to be at least like washcloth wide, would be my guess.
Can I want to ask a question. I don't care if I seem stupid, but I don't want to seem insensitive. It seems to me that knitting blind would be a lot more difficult than knitting with sight.
Well,
and the fact that she's doing this blind at 87, that just stands out to me. That seems very impressive.
Well, it's awesome. It's awesome, but you actually, if you're just straight up knitting, you don't have to look.
Yeah.
You really don't. I mean, I used to knit and watch TV.
I was just going to say, I remember my Nana knitting without watching her soaps.
If you're not doing like very intricate patterns and you're not doing special stitches, if you're just straight knitting, even purling, you can do it without looking. So, and especially if she's, you know, been knitting her whole life.
Yeah.
But the one thing that I think of is the fact of knitting something narrow like that, even if it's super, super long, that's so much easier than knitting a blanket.
Yeah,
just think about the weight of a blanket on you. And as you're knitting it, you've got stitches on your needles for that whole length. A lot of people use circular needles for that. So they're connected with just a cable.
Mm-hmm.
So it's not like you're holding up these big giant knitting needles with your arms.
Yeah,
but it's a lot more work to work across, you know, like 230 stitches versus 15.
That's a good forearm workout. Huh.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, no, I never thought about that.
Plus the weight on your, sitting on your lap as you're doing it.
That part stood out to me right away as soon as you said that.
Mm-hmm.
Wow. I've never thought about any of that. That's interesting. I didn't realize there could be a little bit of a workout in that, too, though.
Oh, yeah.
That makes sense. especially some of the blankets I've seen that have been knitted and stuff.
Yeah,
they're always
knitters
heavy. They're
knit a lot. They have forearm strength and dexterity in their hands and wrists.
Mm. That is interesting. Thank you, Melissa. That was
no
good.
Problem.
I think you're going to like this one. I was saving it. So this comes to us again from Andy Corbley, doing great work over at PositiveNewsNetwork.org. You want to read the entire article, although I am probably going to touch on quite a bit of it, because I think it's really interesting, but I really think this is something that the more people that hear about it, who knows who's going to spring in action and do something similar.
Okay.
Across America, cities are choosing to upcycle their felled urban trees into valued products rather than chipping them. Burning them or dumping them into the landfill.
Awesome.
Along with being more generally favorable to the environment, it's a trend that's leading to entrepreneurial innovation as a network of urban woodworkers has co-sealed around municipalities looking to do something more productive with waste lumber.
Hmm.
When processed, sold, and utilized to its highest value, the U.S. could produce nearly 8 billion board feet of urban-sourced lumber annually, or around 10% of the production that the traditional lumber industry gathers from America's forests.
Wow.
An article from Pew Charitable Trust reports that in 2018, city leaders in Harrisburg, Virginia, began a wood utilization effort that saw felled municipalities' trees go into making park benches, planter boxes, and conference room desks. The article continues in Maryland, where the Baltimore Wood Project, a U.S. Forest Service effort led to promote urban wood reclamation, has provided more than 65,000 board feet of city construction of fishing piers, pedestrian bridges, and wellness centers.
Wow.
And I'm going to keep going. On the West Coast arbonists are serving this cause in 350 cities across California and Arizona, lobbying for city ordinances on shade trees and other urban tree planting programs to adopt the planting of tree species with a high-end use value for the purpose of upcycling and reclamation.
Mm.
And recently, West Coast arbonists began supplying lumber and felled urban trees to Taylor Guitars, who were looking for chamomile ash and red ironbark eucalyptus trees for several of their models.
Nice.
Urban Hardwood in Seattle-based Best Spoken Furniture are doing something as well. All of these Urban Hardwood Hardwood's beautiful furnitures is made from trees cut down as part of the tree surgery work in Seattle. Oregon, all these wonderful cities, great places across literally the whole entire U.S. are doing this project, are working on this.
This is incredible.
It's not as carbon neutral as furniture, but making a bioclear and other fertilized produces less CO2 than shredded trees into chips, burning them or loading them into a landfill.
Mm-hmm.
We're not only getting more use of these trees, we're helping the environment, we're helping our economy, we're helping our taxes, yeah, all these different things. Every park bench that's made is one less park bench we are buying.
Mm-hmm.
And there's another factor that they don't talk about in this article. I don't blame them, but it's just something that I thought of because I have a weird brain. And last week, I had J.R. Seward in talking real estate.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the bigger factors with J.R. in the last 4 or 5 years we've been talking is a lack of inventory. And so I noticed over like a week or two ago, well, the lumber prices have gone down.
Mm-hmm.
And so hopefully that sees an increase. And JR agreed that hopefully we'll see an increase in that.
Mm-hmm.
But then I saw this and I thought, well, wait a minute. There's wood that nobody's using. Can we turn that into houses? Can we turn that into little houses? Can we do things like that with it?
Yeah.
And there is some work like that that is being looked into and possibly can be a thing.
Mm-hmm.
But what was actually really interesting that came out of this article and that I found going down this silly rabbit hole that I did, cities that are doing this and cities that are more friendly to things like this are seeing an uptick of 7 to 11% in population.
Wow.
People are moving to these cities.
Are putting priority on beautification of the city.
People are constantly looking. Every mayor in our local municipalities, ask every one of them one of the biggest questions on their docket: jobs and keeping the population up.
Mm-hmm.
How do I keep people in town, local residents in town, and how do I bring new people in
and get them enrolled in our schools and into our workforce? Yeah.
We've talked about this before. Dog-friendly cities just do better,
mm-hmm,
whether you like that or not. Whatever you want to think about it, you're a search engine away from seeing the same stats that I've seen for the last 20-some years.
Mm-hmm.
This has grown. But this is another factor of being of the creativity of with your environment and working with it and trying to make something of it. It's not to say that every city that does something with wood like this is going to see an uptick in population. But in every area... Say, in our area, I think one of the bigger concerns is PFAS and water pollution and all this. And I know everybody's tired of hearing that term. If you're tired of hearing of it, let's do something about it. Maybe we won't hear the term as much anymore.
You're going to hear it a lot more very soon.
Yeah.
Unfortunately, that's the reality because it's being discovered in more and more places around the state, and there's going to be more pressure to do something about it. I don't know about you, but I don't want my water to give me cancer.
I don't think a lot of people are going to move to towns like that. So this is one of the things that you do to increase your population, to increase your people that, not just your population, big name
companies. The
quality
of life.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
In your
Big quality of life first and foremost,
right?
Certainly.
Mm-hmm.
I'm looking at this such as an economic thing right now because I've been doing this for a long time, and I'm used to the pushback from some of the audience. Usually the pushback, the only way I get people to listen is by talking money.
That is a very good point. Because
It is a fair point. Yes, that's why I'm bringing it up.
Doing this is going to be more work on the front end and more money from the city to process the lumber versus just chipping it down and burning it or getting rid of it or disposing it. But by doing this, they create a sustainable product. They do, you know... It's the long game that we need to be looking at. And the same thing is true for bringing industry here and bringing companies here. We need to hold the ones accountable that ruined our water sources and that put the PFAS there in the first place.
Mm-hmm.
And then, you know, and we do need to be friendly to businesses coming into the state. They're talking about implementing a flat tax across the state right now. Would that maybe entice businesses to come here and set up camp? Maybe. Is it going to hurt the middle class and the lower class people in this state? Absolutely.
Mm.
So, you know, there's a lot of factors that we need to think about and consider looking at things like this. But the long-term benefits are really what we need to focus on, not the short-term.
It's interesting, too, and I agree. It's interesting how so many companies are, the ones that are really doing well right now are taking an interest in these things and the environment and you know,
they
adding
have to
it. Yeah. Well, their stocks are going down when they don't. Yeah. So again, money comes into play, and they're like, wait a minute.
Talk with your pocketbook.
The people care about us actually doing something about the environment. We better do something. You know, if that's what it takes, that's what it takes.
Yeah, it might be cheaper to dump asbestos building product onto somebody's backyard, but then when they come back and say, hey, you ruined, you poisoned this ground, you poisoned our the people that live here, that's not okay. Mm-mm. And in the long term, they need to be held accountable for it.
You look at what happened with Detroit, one of America's strongest, oldest, greatest cities, and it's been hurting for so long. And you look at where it started, and so much of it started with people just not being able to use their water, like and moving out of the city, and little by little, more and more of these things happening and stuff. And you find out years later about the infrastructure in Detroit and how horrible it is, and everything that's going on below the streets and everything, and the pipes and all this mm-hmm. stuff, and yeah, it all adds up. You take care of these things, you do more of these things, you have more of an invitable city, you're going to have more businesses come in. You're going to have the bigger businesses come mm-hmm. in. You're going to have more people coming in that, on one hand, could cause pollution, so you need to hold them accountable like you were talking about, but also are going to bring more jobs, more people into your communities.
Yes.
Which is, again, what every small town is looking for, essentially, mm-hmm. and looking to achieve. As a side note, I'm used to me doing this for years on this station, but now I've got a partner in it, and you, Melissa. When we get going on our rants or something, I wonder if it wouldn't be fun for the audience if I had some like silly background music, like
here we are off on our soapboxes.
I would take my head, like I'd have to take my headphones out, like I couldn't hear that in the background. But as I'm rambling it on my soapbox in the background, just weird circus music.
Yeah, and then we, you know, tone it down and draw it back in. Get back on topic.
Yes. Just for the people who don't care when I go on a rant or anything, just
it
entertain
needs to be
them
like
some.
Back roads of Wisconsin. Yeah,
yeah. Oh, I like that. Yes, that's good. Take a break right here. We'll come back into our National Day of Calendar. It is Melissa and James taking you through your morning on WFHR. Welcome back to the morning show here at WFHR. Melissa and James here with you. Time to dive into our National Day of Calendar.
All right.
And actually starting yesterday until January 20th, Family Meditation Week.
Hey.
It's a good chance to meditate
Sit
with your family.
Around with your family and breathe together.
It's the only way to get them to shut up. It's the only... No, I'm just kidding. I'm joking.
Well, you know how they say, like, it's a good sign if you can just sit in silence
yes.
with someone.
Yes.
And not feel, like, tense. Mm-hmm. And, I mean, even if you don't actually get into meditation or anything like that, I think it's a good idea to just sit with your family and breathe and relax. And just be in the same space doing nothing.
And if you can get them to do this...
You don't need to do it long.
No, you don't need to do it long.
5 minutes, 10 minutes.
Such an accomplishment.
It would be.
I would be high-fiving people after I got done doing it. Like, yeah!
I think you would feel a sense of togetherness and closeness that you maybe wouldn't have otherwise.
Mm-hmm. It's worth a try.
And why not?
And it's one of those things that might take a couple times, but it could be very rewarding. It's Cable Car Day.
Ah.
In early 1871, British-born U.S. resident Andrew Smith Halliday received the first patent to in relation to the cable car and an extension which is marked by Cable Car Day.
Okay.
An occasion that is marked. Halliday's design for cable propelled transit emerged when he witnessed horses failing, falling, and even dying while attempting to pull cars up San Francisco's steep Jackson Street. Fortunately for San Francisco Equians, Halliday had the talent to turn his sympathy into action, having previously invented a type of aerial tramway and designed improvements to mining ropes, which resulted in their economic life extending by more than 873%.
Wow.
Man, we need to talk about this guy more often.
Mm-hmm.
2 years after receiving his cable car patent, Halliday set up the world's first cable car railroad on Clay Street. None of the original line services, but Grip Art Car 8 is preserved in Mason Street Cable Car Museum, which mm-hmm. is in, of course, San Francisco. Have you ever ridden one of these?
I have not. Mm-hmm. I've always wanted to. I think they're cool.
They are. They are.
Plus,
they go a little
you know,
faster than you realize.
Judy Garland rode on one and sang that song.
I had to do this when I got to San Francisco, even though it took me completely out of my way. Completely out of my way. Almost got lost. Mm. Couldn't find Will, the only guy I knew in the whole state of California.
But cable car.
That's exactly what it's the same thing that happened to me the first time I saw the ocean. Mm. I see the ocean and I literally am not thinking. I'm just running like to the water. And as I get into the water and I'm about up to my hips in it, and I'm feeling the water and the salt, and I'm breathing it in, and I've waited my whole life for this and everything, and I realize my phone and everything is in my pockets.
Oh, no.
and then the cable car thing, very similar. Will and I are just bopping down the street, and they see this cable car parked there, and the guy, you know, everybody on board or something like that, is yelling, and I just instinctively, like, I've always wanted to do this. Mm-hmm. I'm going to do this. Now I want to go there. So I got on the thing, and we just start rolling. And then I realize Will's not with me, and I don't know where I am.
Oh, no.
I don't have a cell phone or anything like that. I got no clue how to figure out where to find him. We ended up finding each other. But
well,
yeah,
that's good.
That was a lot of fun, though. It was a great ride. I don't regret a second of it. Even if I was still walking around the streets of San Francisco lost, I would not regret it. They are fun. They just go a little faster than I think you realize, especially the first jump. You know?
Yeah, as they get going.
Yeah. Ditches New Year's resolution day.
Oh.
New Year's resolutions, they're a great opportunity to really set ourselves up for some magnificent failures and disappointments, all right? Well, here comes a time when you just have to acknowledge that your New Year's resolutions were unreasonable and unrealistic, and that time is a fortnight into the new year. So rejoice in your newfound freedom from treacherous diets or horrible exercise regimes. Here's a day to just ditch your New Year's resolution, apparently, 17 days in. Yeah, I guess.
One thing I was talking about with my brother about this, because I asked him if he was going to do any New Year's resolutions, and he's like, no, I think that's dumb, because I think that it sets an expectation for failure, and that it doesn't need to be a New Year's resolution. It can be just a resolution in general. Mm. Like, you know, I said I want to learn Spanish. So I purchased a program, and I'm paying for it. Now, did I ignore it for the last 5 days? Mm-hmm. Yes, I did. Am I going to pick it up again today out of guilt? Probably.
Yeah.
But it's also something to just, you know, why not try? And if you forget a day or 5 days, well, that's okay. There's always tomorrow.
Trying and failing is not a failure.
Right.
It's not a failure. You tried.
No.
You
keep trying.
Yeah. We've got the word failure all wrong. Like, failure is when you don't try, when you don't do anything about a subject or something,
right,
and you continue to let madness and bad things happen. Failure is not at least attempting or at least trying.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a lot to, most things take a couple of times to try before you're actually going to be any good at it or get it down.
Yep.
So there's nothing wrong with that. I think that we put... first off, I think we put way too much pressure on resolutions and on ourselves. Mm-hmm. And we're the ones doing this to ourselves, which can be the most brain-racking thing. But again, I talk about this every year. People are doing this wrong. Have simple resolutions. I'm going to breathe more this year. You're going to feel good when you accomplish these things.
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to talk to more people.
Yeah.
No, just simple stuff. I'm joking. I'm half joking and I'm half serious about this because...
No, it doesn't hurt to have very simple resolutions. Why not?
We talk about little victories all the time. Little wins matter. They build your self-esteem. They build your self-worth.
Yeah. Like we talked about that lady that was trying something new every day.
Yeah.
It could be something new every month. It doesn't have to be every day.
You never know who is watching, especially kids, and how they can be, inspired by this. And that leads me into National Kid Inventors Day.
Mm-hmm.
Just because children passes less knowledge of how the world works, possess more or less knowledge of how the world works, that doesn't mean that they can't have ideas for practical and useful inventions. In fact, that might mean that they have better ones. many people believe that children are capable of being particularly creative for the simple reason that they don't yet know how difficult many things are.
Mm-hmm.
And are therefore able to imagine much more than adults. I've always admired that an animal if it loses its leg, it doesn't sit there and you know, ask for help. Mm-hmm. It just gets moving. It right. just keeps going. Mm-hmm. I've had a lot of people tell me, well, it just doesn't know any better. And I don't know what if that...
What's wrong with
yeah,
that?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, I don't know.
What's the alternative?
Yeah, yeah. better to just sit there and just take it or whatever. Mm-hmm. I think kids are very similar in this regard. They have not been, tainted by life in general, right. to lack of a better way to put it.
Well, and to be able to think for a lot, they can think of like the broad picture things too, because they don't need to think about all the little things that go into it to mm-hmm. make it up that make mm-hmm. it so complicated and complex. But sometimes we need those big idea thinkers too.
Yes. It's a great combination too.
Mm-hmm.
It's Benjamin Franklin Day.
Hey.
Commemorating the birthday of Benjamin Franklin, one of the founding fathers of the United States and a noted scientist, inventor, and statesman. Benjamin Franklin Day is a time to celebrate the life and work of one of America's most famous and influential figures and reflect on his many accomplishments. Born in Boston, Mass. In January 17th in 1706, Benjamin Franklin was one of the most accomplished and important leaders of the American Enlightenment and made significant contributions to science, literature, and politics.
Yes.
Yep. And I still don't know if he gets enough credit. I think about this with a lot of the forefathers of this country. I wonder in some ways if we truly appreciate them as much as we could.
Yeah.
And I mean that because I take a look at appreciation as a person completely.
Mm-hmm.
I'm talking about everything good about Ben and everything bad about Ben.
Mm-hmm.
And every bit of that is okay. Mm-hmm. It's history. And understanding, we have kids grow up in school from first to what, 12th grade, and constantly being taught about leaders. And here's Benjamin Franklin, here's George Washington, here's Abraham Lincoln. Good, 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 good. We never tell them anything bad these people did.
Mm-hmm.
We are starting to have a little more accountability in life, and mm-hmm. we're starting to hold some of our historical figures to that accountability.
Mm-hmm.
There is nothing wrong with that.
Well, no.
You can do two ways of this. You can do that and not completely throw away everything good that they did.
Correct.
If you hold them accountable, you're showing the young people, these are human beings.
Mm-hmm.
They are not somebody to put on a pedestal.
No, they're not perfect.
They're somebody to look up to, be influenced by, mm-hmm. to put on our money.
To all learn these things, from.
To learn from, to grow from, to be inspired by, yes. But not necessarily to idolize.
Correct.
Idolizing something is you want to be that.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't think we want a generation after generation of kids trying to be something that they can never be.
Well, no, because if they don't look at the full history of that person, they can't just be the perfect parts of that person.
I'm going to grow up and I'm going to be like Abraham Lincoln. I'm going to grow up and be like George Washington. And all of a sudden I do something wrong and I mess up in life. And I'm not as perfect as George. I'm not as perfect as Abraham Lincoln. All of a sudden, I start feeling less self-worthy. I start beating myself up, all these things. No. If we hold these people accountable, if we do this right, and we show that the good, the bad, all these things, guess what? History's not going to fall apart. American democracy is not going to fall apart.
No.
In fact, it might even be stronger from mm-hmm. these actions.
Absolutely.
I think when I think of these days and Benjamin Franklin Day, these things, I want this story to be told.
Mm-hmm.
I want everything about Ben to be told because there's good, there's bad, and that's all okay.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we can't change it.
Well, he still accomplished what he did.
Mm-hmm.
All those things I just said before about him hold just as true with the accountability.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that's something that is, I'm a little kid seeing that. That inspires me. That doesn't make me want to be him. It makes me want to be just like him, be better than him and all that.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what everybody should want for our youth.
Right.
To be better than us. That's mm-hmm. part of the job here. Except for my son, who is way too more stylish than I am and looks way handsomer than I am. That stuff could have waited a little while. I'm really not dealing with this well.
Well, just take a breath, James. It's okay.
It's also Popeye Day. That's a fun one.
Hey, Popeye the Sailor Man.
And if you have not seen the Robin Williams Popeye movie, it's still worth watching. I don't care what anybody says. I don't care how bad it is. It's a great movie.
Eat your spinach.
And National Bootleggers Day.
Hey.
Some of the more interesting American history is bootlegging, whether you like it or not. Whether you like it or not, some of the families, the most celebrated families in American history, got a lot of their family history to think bootlegging. And not even just some of the like Rockefellers or Kennedys or any of these things. I'm talking about the Smiths, the Joneses, the you know, the families first coming to this country and starting out. Mm-hmm. Guess what? A lot of our families got their start from bootlegging. May not like it, but it's, again, truth. And it's okay. It's not a bad thing. It's owning, having accountability to things. Most immigrants that came to this country, the jobs were already taken.
Right.
You know, what are we going to do? How are we going to feed our family? How are we going to survive as a young immigrant?
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to find a way. That is the American way. These immigrants are just doing the American way, figuring it out, finding a way to make it happen. The term bootlegging got its start in the United States back in the 1880s when Midwestern white men would slip flasks of liquor into their boots so that they could illegally trade them with Native Americans. Mm. Bootlegging. I didn't know that.
Oh, really?
No, that's awesome. That's a good one. Mm. I've researched a ton about bootlegging. I was going to be in a TV show that was all about the history of bootlegging from Kentucky to New York. And I researched the daylights out of this. I never heard that part. I never read that part of it, though.
That and bathtub gin.
Yeah, that, ooh, yeah. The creativity that went into it. I know bootlegging was wrong, et cetera, all that. Put that aside. Everybody's drinking now. So let's get over that whole thing. The creativity that people found to have a good time. Speakeasy, juke joints, the way that you had, like, there's great pictures of like where they could actually like flip like floors.
Oh yeah, a whole room into something else.
The creativity we went into just to make sure we could party and just have a good time.
And then we utilized all of that in the theater.
Mm-hmm. Yes, very true. Very true. There's a connection with vaudeville, bootlegging, all these things. Yeah. Take a break right here. We'll get to Melissa's news. We'll come back and have some more fun on the morning show here at WFHR. Yeah. Welcome back, everybody. Mornings here on WFHR. Serious comedy to start your day. I had a listener telling me the other day that I confused them.
Why?
They've been listening to me apparently for a long time, which I apologized to them about and did tell them
they
should probably seek some therapy, some form of it. But I've been doing this where I can't help myself. I ramp. That's called ramping. Mm-hmm. You know, in radio, you do that. You let the instrumental part play and you hit right before the lyrics kick in.
Yeah.
I did that for, you know, 9-10 years. So I kind of got in the habit of it. And even though I haven't
done
it. Second
nature.
I just can't help myself. Well, I confused the listener that they thought they were listening to the old radio station that I used to be on. And they were confused when we started just talking. And they're like, well, are they going to go to music? Oh, wait.
When's the music?
Do appreciate you guys out there. Mm-hmm. Best listeners in radio, every single one of you. I wanted to touch on this one. Thought it was kind of interesting, Melissa. And I'm curious, too, because I again, like I can't help myself. I've got this original story from Yahoo, and then I go down Mirror and some other websites looking at some other things that my brain thinks of.
Mm-hmm.
Someone on Reddit posted a photo after they stayed at a Marriott in Florida, and there was a sign in the mini fridge that said they'd be charged $50 if they put any of their own stuff in it.
What?
Quote, the refreshment center is on a sensor. Use of the refreshment center for personal storage will automatically incur a $50 charge.
What?
In other words, it looks like they're now charging to make sure you don't buy your own stuff and keep it in there to save money.
Hmm.
There's another line at the bottom that says guests can tell the front desk for can call the front desk for quote refrigerator requests. So some people think that means you can request an actual fridge for free, but Marriott has not commented.
No,
I know when I've worked at just about every big hotel chain, and we all had a thing where if you wanted to keep personal belongings in a safe. Every place had a safe. The rich hotels, the cheap hotels, every one of them had a safe. I don't know if this is a similar thing, because some of the fancier hotels, we actually had a little mini safe you could take into your room with you.
Hmm.
If they do charge, a few people mentioned a hack to get around it. Call the front desk and tell them you need a fridge to store your medication. Hmm. They'll probably let you use the mini fridge or bring you another fridge for free. You shouldn't have to do that.
Bring a fridge. That seems weird.
You shouldn't have to lie or hustle the hotel.
No. Refrigerator requests. See, to me, that would mean like asking for something like if they had just Diet Pepsi in their refrigerator refreshment section and you want Diet Coke.
Yeah.
Like, that seems like what a refrigerator request would be. But how ridiculous to have a refrigerator in a hotel room that you couldn't put your own Pepsi into.
Yeah, yeah.
Or your leftovers from dinner.
Yeah.
I mean, from a hotel, you know, a housekeeper point of view, having to clean out people's gross leftovers that they left in there for a week, that's what comes to mind for me. But no, it is probably just about making money.
Yeah.
The hotels that I've stayed at recently, they put a hold on your card now for any incidentals, they call them. And that means like the soap, the shampoo, the lotion, all those things that used to be free,
yeah,
you get charged for them now.
I'll say this, just to you know, hit the other side of it. Hotels are not like anybody else. Nobody's doing this because you've got more money than you know what to do with and you want more.
No.
They're doing it because they need to survive, and a lot of hotel chains are hurting right now. But I think that you can also counter that with how are you going to get people to stay in your hotels if you're just nickel and diming them every little thing?
Mm-hmm.
That's not going to help people move into there either. So
So what used to be complimentary, mm-hmm. you know, having a bar of soap to wash your hands with in your hotel room. That was complimentary. You expect that. And the hotel industry has enabled that expectation because they've always had it. And now suddenly they're turning around and adding a charge for it. That should be included in the rates.
With the you know, more and more becoming more and more popular and used, B&Bs and those things, do you think we could get to a point where there's like 1-2 hotel chains? I don't know if we get to a point where there's none. Like, I don't think that's ever going to happen.
No, I don't think it will.
I
don't think it will, and I don't think that there should be I don't think there should be just two. It shouldn't be a monopoly.
I agree.
Yeah. There should absolutely be a diverse, you know, array of hotels available. But if they're going to charge you for those incidentals, they need to tell you how much they cost.
Mm-hmm.
Coffee should not cost $35. Guess what? It did. Yeah, last time I stayed in a hotel, one pot of coffee, $35. Well, I also used a bar of soap. So maybe those two things.
But I mean, and this is in Wisconsin, correct?
Yes.
Yeah. I mean, it's ridiculous. Like, you go, imagine what it is in New York. Imagine what it is in LA or something like that.
And those costs should be told to you up front.
Oh, yeah.
It should be at least available to look for on the website. It should be posted somewhere in the room. They shouldn't be sneaky about it because that's what it feels like. It's like you've got all these hidden fees and hidden charges that you weren't told about beforehand. Okay, so my room is $120 a night. Why is my bill $175?
I just wonder this because I know that there's, like, I love the newspaper industry. I like journalism. I like newspapers, all that stuff. I understand why they've kind of faded. Mm-hmm. I understand the evolution that's happened with news online and these things. I understand the good and the bad of that, by the way. But I do understand that this is evolution. This is what happens. We just were talking about earlier about how this gentleman sees these horses trying to pull these huge cars up a hill. Mm-hmm. I'm like, oh, that ain't going to work. Let's invent something better. And now the horses aren't doing that anymore. So we don't have maybe as many horses as we used to. But we still have some horses.
Yeah, they're just not dying pulling cable cars uphill.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah. Evolution happens with everything in life, in every field, in every way. Some of it good, some of it necessary, just because, well, if hotels aren't going to treat us right, maybe I should look into this B&B thing and that. And then you see other industries grow and be created. Would you thought 30 years ago when we were kids, like when we were 10, that a big thing would be, I can go to a stranger's house and rent their house for like a weekend and stay there. And that's it. That's the end of it. And then I leave. And the house is, you know, I just board up everything and everything's fine. it's crazy to me. It's weird. There's some little things like this that we've created in society out of necessity because of price, because of inconvenience, because of not wanting, like you said, this kind of like backhanded thing that gets done to us of, well, they signed up for this, but they're charging me for this, and this, and, you know, that kind of thing. Mm-hmm. People get tired of that stuff.
Yeah. Well, there's a dark side to that Airbnb industry, too, though.
Oh, yeah.
Now,
yeah,
it's exacerbating the housing shortage problem because rich homeowners or even, you know, middle-income homeowners have, you know, if they have a second home somewhere, okay, well, I can turn a profit with that second home when I'm not there. Let's buy a third home and turn another profit. So they turn into like these mini hotel magnates with their couple little properties. But then the availability of housing for people who live in those areas is less.
Mm-hmm. I also think of, we've had in Rapids here one or two stories about hotels not being run right or having to be shut down or closed. I know in Point they've got a big issue with that one, with one of their bigger hotels out there. The people, like, you know, stay the person actually renting out rooms still, even though he was not legally able to. These kind of things. So that stuff's not helping that industry anything either.
No.
It's just going to be interesting to see how that grows, how that evolves. Mm-hmm. Like, you know, those worlds, B&B and hotels and motels and all this stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe we'll create something even better. We'll combine them. We'll think of something even more. Take a break, come back, and we're going to talk a little bit about our $1 million advertising giveaway.
Yeah.
Talk about our schedule and some more fun stuff coming up here on The Morning Show at WFHR. Welcome back, everybody, to The Morning Show here at WFHR, locally grown radio. Melissa and James here with you. We hope you're having a fantastic day out there, everybody. Mm-hmm. Got some good stuff lined up for you that I want to get into. But first, I want to talk about our schedule, talk about this amazing giveaway we've got going on. And when Melissa and I are, you know, get into the 8 o'clock hour, Misty's Menu Birthday and Anniversary Club, 9 o'clock hour, good stories, then I write stories, some other fun stuff we'll get into. Lead you into Morning Magazine to kick off for the week in part one. Sally Kistner from the Arts Council, executive director over there, will join us. Eric Brittenocker, head of the PAC over there, Performing Arts Center.
Nice.
And then they always bring a nice guest for us. And coming up on the airwaves today, we'll talk with Tom Curry, tuba player with the Wisconsin Brass Quintet.
Oh, cool.
They're going to be coming to our area February 2nd, so we're going to preview that show for you and talk a little bit about that and get to know Tom a little.
Awesome.
Did some quick homework on Tom. Very interesting guy. Looking forward to that.
Plays a tuba.
Yeah, that's always fun.
What more do you need to know?
right. You know, tuba players are always interesting.
Uh-huh.
And in part two, we will catch up with our United Way of Southwood and Adams Counties. Looking forward to talking with them. Plenty of great things to always talk about with our United Way. Looking forward to catching up with them in part two. That is going to be a lot of fun. Taking a look at our sports schedule for tonight at 6:30, Wisconsin men's basketball. Badgers taking on Penn State. That game, our tip-off will be about 6:30 right here at WFHR. Looking forward to that. Tomorrow on WIRI at 7:30, Marquette men's basketball taking on Providence. And then on Thursday, we've got Wisconsin women's basketball taking on Maryland at 6:10 here at WFHR. On WIRI, Assumption girls basketball hosting Auburndale. Randy and Don running that game.
Woohoo!
It's going to be good. And we got Wisconsin hockey on the radio on Friday here at WFHR, 6:30, the puck will drop, Wisconsin versus Ohio State. One of the bigger rivalries in all facets. It doesn't matter what they're playing. If they're playing tiddlywinks, you're going to be glued to it because it's Ohio State and Wisconsin.
When's the last time you played tiddlywinks?
I don't know if I've ever have. I don't know. I usually say water polo, and I don't want to offend water polo fans, and I feel bad for that. But I wonder. I did want to get to the rest of our schedule here on The Morning Show and Morning Magazine as well. Tomorrow, Katrina Hittner from Family Natural Foods is going to be sitting in with The Morning Show. Looking forward to that. That'll be fun. On Thursday, we get the gang back together. Melissa and Seth will be hanging out with us.
Yep.
And we'll be joined not only by our Pet of the Week, a little bit later than that. And our Pet of the Week this week, we have a great sponsor for that, I believe.
Eway Sales and Service. Buy, sell, and trade many items from collectors to firearms. They are located on 8th Street in Wisconsin Rapids. Tell Kitty I said hi.
Yeah.
All right.
Yeah. So we make sure to say hi to Kitty out there. We will also, that'll be about to kick off the 9 o'clock hour. Around 9:30, Taylor Schaefer is going to join us, Alice and Dairyland's own.
Oh, yeah.
It'll be fun. I don't know how much you and Seth have gotten to talk to her.
No, not a bit. I've met her, but that's about it.
you guys will get a chance to talk and interview with her on the air. That'll be fun. Good. Taylor's really looking forward to her. They're going to talk ginseng and some other stuff.
Oh.
It's going to be fun.
Awesome.
And then on Wednesday on for Morning Magazine, Wisconsin Rapids Mayor Shane Blazer will be in with us.
Good.
Along with Wisconsin Rapids Community Media to record. And then mm-hmm. we'll catch up with the Central Wisconsin Cultural Center in part two.
Good.
On Thursday, we'll visit the Rome area and catch up with them. And then UW-Madison Extension, we'll talk with them. And plenty more. Senator Teston going to join us on Friday, awesome. Along with the Historic Point boss. Terry John's going to sit in with us Friday. It's going to be fun. Yay. Looking forward to that.
Oh, busy week.
Yeah, we got some great people joining us. Appreciate all of our co-hosts and all of our guests on Morning Magazine. Shout out to Pam Hilke and the great scheduling she does. And all week long, we're going to be talking about this awesome $1 million advertising giveaway the Civic Media is doing.
We're in the countdown now, James.
Yeah,
we're leading up to the big day, January 26th. This is all happening on one day. $1 million that Civic Media is giving away to advertisers in our area, to local businesses, big, small, everybody.
9 hours, 9 days, 1 hour and 51 seconds, 50 seconds, 49 seconds.
You got a countdown on the website.
I love the countdown. If you're a local business owner in Wisconsin and would like to advertise on the radio but haven't gotten around to it yet, or perhaps you don't even know how, now is your chance. We know you'll love so much coming back. We want you to be a part of this. This is our chance to not only work with local and small businesses, businesses in general. If you've been with us for years, if you've never been with us, this is your chance. This is a way of literally putting our money where our mouth is. Yeah. We talk about buying local, supporting local. $1 million seems to do a pretty good job of that.
We are so excited to show the power of our network that covers the entire state of Wisconsin now.
Mm-hmm. We want you to be a part of this. Find out more and mark your calendars again from March 26th.
Nope, January.
January. Did I say March?
You did.
I did.
Why?
I don't know why I do
spring?
That. I guess so, yeah.
January no, it's the 26th. Day after my birthday, James.
Yeah, see,
January 26th.
That'll make it easier for me to
9
remember.
9 a.m.
Be sure to do that. You can find out more by going to civicmedia.us/million. That's civicmedia.us/million. And be sure to let everybody know about this as well. Make sure that people know that you heard about this on the morning show here at WFHR. Mm-hmm. Help us with some bragging rights on that one. We'll talk more about this when we come back. We'll be joined by our friends from the Weather Eye Weather Center when we get back after CBS News right here on the morning show at WFHR.